Less is more was the central design principle of the great 20th century architect Mies van der Rohe. The phrase has been used and abused ever since it was uttered. It's become a mantra for interior designers, decluttering gurus and fashion icons. So why then do we have so much stuff? Many of us are drowning in it. Cupboards and wardrobes bulging at the seams. So much stuff, so many choices, so many decisions. Novelist Kate Veitch wonders why we're all so busy accumulating far more than we can use while at the same time yearning for a home devoid of clutter. She's written an essay about her relationship with stuff in the latest Griffith Review. It's called Why Do We Own So Many Things? And she's joining us now from Bali. G'day, Kate.
Hi, Cassie. How are you?
Well, thanks. Now, tell us, you describe your relationship to stuff in this article. What's your home filled with?
Oh, far too much. In fact, the essay came about partly because two good friends separately came to visit me who hadn't seen me in my home there, sent from interstate, and both of them happened to look around and said something like, "Do you think you could fit anything more in?" And it made me look at the place with new eyes and think, there is rather a lot of stuff, isn't there? And yet, when I looked around, I knew the provenance of every single object. And I love them. I love all of the little carved dogs and the textiles that I've bought here and there. I love all of the vases. My grandmother taught me you can never have too many vases.
I understand you have a weakness for small figurines of dogs.
Well, they can be small, they can be large. I do. I have a special attachment to the objet de dog. However, after I had counted them in the room that I write in and realised that there were, well, over 40, I really did think, okay, it's time for some of my doggies to go and have a little lie down and a rest. So there are fewer around me now. But that's the thing. I'm interested in, just as you said, the relationships that we have with our stuff. I'm not someone who takes a point of view that, you know, too much stuff is bad, get rid of it. It's not as simple as that. It really is a complex thing. We form relationships with the material things that we own because of our associations with them. Now, that's one reason to have a lot of stuff. Of course, there's also the fact that we just do accumulate things for perhaps less personal or noble, shall we say, reasons, like status, showing that we've got the latest gadgets, like demonstrations of our good taste, and by the simple inability to move that old toaster on after we've got the one that actually works.
We're talking with Kate Veitch, who's written an essay, Why We Own So Many Things. Do you keep stuff that other people would throw out? Are you a bit of a collector / hoarder? And why is that? I mean, some people find it lovely to be surrounded by little objects in a room full of things that the eye can rest on. Others would like a white plain wall and just one or two ornaments. Give us a call, 1300 225 76 1300, call RN. You touch on an interesting piece of, I guess it's a very sad part of our recent history, Kate, in this essay, and that's the American experience of homes that had been bought with the collapse of the GFC.
Yes, and the housing market.
That's right. Those mortgages that were, you know, pretty dodgy, and many people weren't able to keep up with them in that period. And you describe someone walking into those places and finding stuff.
Oh, yeah. So I have a friend in the States where I spent a lot of time. He's what they call there a realtor. We call just a real estate agent. So as he lives in a, you know, what was a prosperous town in California, medium-sized town. It's still doing okay. Nevertheless, that housing bubble, when it broke, affected everywhere, absolutely everywhere. So he was called upon to assess many, many houses. In walking into many of them, in the States you can just walk away. You can just leave it and walk away. They don't pursue you for the debt. The bank resumes the house. So these people had walked away, and when he came into many of them, he found them from the front door to the back in every single room, piled with stuff. And this was things. These were things that had been bought largely online or from what they call their big box stores. You know, there was ski equipment, for people who live hundreds, thousands of miles from the ski field. There were plasma TVs not even out of their wrappers. When he spoke to me about it, it was shocking and moving, really, to hear him describe this situation where people had been encouraged to place value on their lives through nothing else but the stuff that they own.
So while they couldn't pay their mortgage repayments, they were still spending big on things.
And still being offered new credit cards. Still being offered more credit on which to buy. Mm. I mean, these people dug themselves a pit with a plastic card that they could not climb out of. And they were encouraged to do so by a society that wants people, needs people, will collapse if people don't keep buying more stuff, whether they want it, whether they need it or not. And it definitely does become a compulsion personally, precisely because it's a compulsion for the capitalist society. Mm. What would happen if we stopped buying new stuff?
We're talking with Kate Veitch about why we own so many things. Susan has a story to tell. She's in the ACT. G'day, Susan.
Suzanne. Hi, Cassie. How are you?
Well, thanks. Yes, you've got an unhealthy relationship.
Well, I think I do. I just love acquiring all this bric-a-brac. I don't know about my book thing. I have many, many books, many too many books. I don't see that as unhealthy as I see the bric-a-brac compulsion, and it is a compulsion, and I think it goes right back, because I was just saying to the person that first answered the phone, I can remember I was a little girl going off to boarding school, and I said to my grandmother, I need all this stuff, and it was like scissors, paper clips, office equipment, which I, of course, didn't need at all, but I wanted it. I needed it somehow.
So it gave you a sense of home and a sense of stability or something?
I don't know. Maybe some sort of security, yes. Now, this is really maybe a weird theory of mine, but I think it possibly dates back to the fact that my mother absented herself very early in my life.
Mm.
Mm. I don't know, but I do think it's an unhealthy habit I have.
Mm.
And the only way I can beat it really is to avoid op shops and, you know, curio shops and so forth.
That is hard. That is very
hard. It is
hard.
It's really hard. And I'm really in my element in those places, wandering around finding things.
Mm. Mm.
But, it's strange. And, you know, about time I started avoiding them, I think, for a while, because I'd, you know, come home with all this stuff.
Well, thank you, Suzanne, especially for reminding us that we mustn't judge people for accumulating things. There are many reasons for it, of course. Paul, also in the ACT, you've got a sister who helps you out every now and again.
She's got a philosophy. She said she was bound by her possessions and couldn't move out of Tasmania to Melbourne when she did go. So she decided that she hadn't used an object for 12 months. That was out the door, and including the husband. So,
Wow, that's radical.
Safe to say he's still intact. So.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah. Okay, so a 12-month turnover, a kind of annual report on
that's
yourself.
It. That's the one.
Okay. Thanks for that, Paul. Kate, part of this, you were talking there about the encouragement from the external world to buy stuff, and you write in your essay about George Bush right after 9/11 saying, I encourage you to go shopping, get down to Disney World in Florida, take your family, enjoy life. So it was a call to arms, go shopping.
It literally, go shopping, that's exactly right, Yeah, and I think that this phenomenon of having more stuff than we need is something that previous generations, unless they were very wealthy, did not have. Prior really to the Second World War, when there was this massive escalation of manufacturing capacity in order to meet the war needs, followed by the boom years, it is a baby boomer phenomenon, really, that even people who are not wealthy can and often do accumulate far more stuff than we need. Now, perhaps through the millennia of human development, we would have always been drowning in stuff. Certainly rich people didn't leave austere lives way back, did they? They love to have all of their stuff, but now we can too, and we don't really quite know what to do with it. We're encouraged on so many levels, as you say, to get out there and go shopping. That's what our society, our value, our worth is all about. And yet, listening to Suzanne's story of the bric-a-brac, I my heart really goes out to her, because even though she loves the things, I sense that she feels burdened by them. And this was a word that came up when I was researching this essay, which did have a serious intent. The edition of Griffith Review that I wrote it for is called Fixing the System, and it's about how we fix the system. Can we fix a system that is breaking, if not broken? When I researched this whole issue of material ownership among friends, the word burden came up so many times. People have this real seesaw relationship with the things that they own, that they love them, but they feel burdened by them. One friend said that every time he tries to get rid of the beautiful things that he owns, because he has too many, every time he tries to cull them, he finds it impossible. And so he continues surrounded by them, feeling both love and a sense of being burdened. It's quite a conundrum. And I'm not talking here about the real OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder of true hoarding, where people are hemmed into their houses by stacks of newspapers 40 years old. I'm just talking about regular clutter reaching a proportion that we're no longer happy with.
You do describe, just finally, Kate, this scene, this quite awful scene when you kind of discovered one of your lifelong friends in a you describe it as being like Gollum in the movies, the Lord of the Ring movies. Tell us that about that story.
This was a friend who never bought new things. She lived in Oregon. She'd moved there from Australia many years ago, and she never bought new things. She was what she proudly described as a dumpster diver in her work. She had the capacity to travel with a truck, and so she rescued things. That was how she saw it. But they had gradually taken over her life. She had containers full of it at her beach house. She forbade me on my last visit there from going down to the basement. And when I did, when there was someone at the door for her, I glimpsed her perched atop a meter-deep mound of clothing and shoes and heaven knows what else. And she It was a frightful moment. She really did look like a creature possessed by her possessions. And she saw the look on my face, and that really was the end of our friendship. She cut it from there on. That was a friendship that had gone back to childhood. Mm. It was a choice between confronting her relationship with the things that had taken over her life or cutting off someone who had witnessed it, really.
Yeah. You say that she cut the rope on that friendship, which was a great expression.
For most of us, it's a lot healthier than that. And I will say this, despite my great love for and attachment to the things that I own, and specifically the memories that they have stored within them, I have never spoken to anyone who did a big cull and who now lives with less stuff who isn't very happy with that.
Well, there you go. There's your take-home message. Thanks so much for talking with us today, Kate.
Thank you.
That's novelist Kate Veitch. She's the author of an essay in the latest Griffith Review called Stuff, Why Do We Own So Many Things? She's also the author of two novels, Listen and Trust, which are both published by Penguin. And she was talking to us from Bali, actually, but she normally lives in New South Wales. Coming up next, Adam Ferrier, you might know his face from the Gruen transfer. He's a consumer behavioural specialist, and he's going to tell us about the truth behind those little surveys that we often do for companies.